Geev Galair, hello everybody, and welcome to our latest issue, episode of our History and Community programme. Cead Mila Fáilte, you're very welcome wherever you are. And this programme is, as usual, brought to you by Dublin North Bay Tourism here on Near 90.3 FM Radio, and we're available worldwide on the web, near.ie. I'm Dennis McIntyre. And just to remind ourselves what our programmes are all about, that they're all based more or less in the Dublin North Bay area, from the Senior's Custom House to Rugged Hoath Head. We want you to know and enjoy the area with its, you know, very diverse environment. We want to tempt you outdoors to explore and discover the riches and charms of the area. We want you to be familiar with all aspects of the wonderful locality, and that includes events and personalities, and today, later on, it's a personality I'll be dealing with mainly. All our programmes are for, with and by the community, and we want your inclusion, interaction and participation. So, you know, please contact us here at Near FM if you have a story, a poem or a song concerning the North Dublin Bay area, or North Dublin Bay neighbourhood in general. And we'd like to hear from anybody who may have written stuff, anything at all, an essay, a thesis, or even an article for a magazine, or even a book. And again, if we overlook something, or we speak of some event, or personality, or whatever, and we leave something out, please let us know, and we'll be glad to include it. For any communication, our email address is dublinnorthbaytourism@gmail.com. In case I don't have time at the end of the programme to mention it, if you want to listen again to any of our programmes, you simply Google Near FM, go to Listen Again, go to Search, and type in History and Community, or indeed my name, Dennis McIntyre, and you'll get any of the previous programmes. So I'm going to go straight into our quiz today. After that, we'll have a little bit of music, and then we'll get on to our main subject. Now, the quiz is, as usual, the regular listeners will need no reminding. We issue two questions each week, and we invite your answers. The quiz is open to everybody, everywhere, or anybody, anywhere, if you like. We have a prize of a book for the winner each week. And if you don't actually catch the questions on this programme, we'll be putting it up in our usual manner, Facebook and so on, after the programme. And again, thanks for your ongoing interest and participation in the quiz. So, without further ado, I'll go through last week's questions and the answers. Now, our two questions last week. Number one was, we said there was a Dublin pharmacist called Thomas Smith who concocted a formula in 1931 for a very famous medical cream. The cream has been produced by Teva, the Teva factory in Baldoyle in North Dublin, ever since. Can you name this cream, which can be found in just about every Irish household? Well, the answer, of course, was pseudocream. And sadly, that factory is actually moving from Baldoyle at the end of next year. That's 2022. It's moving to Belgium. So that's a pity to have such a long innings, if you like, in Baldoyle. But I suppose all good things come to an end. So pseudocream was the first answer. Now, question two. We asked you to name four places or areas in North Dublin, the spellings of which end with the letter K. So any of these would have been, any four of these. You have Coolock, Kilbarrick, Port Marnock, Castle Knock. That caught a lot of people out. Remember we said anywhere in North Dublin, city or county, north of the Liffey. And we have Lusk. And one other that very few people got was the Phoenix Park. That's an area, you know, and it's in North Dublin. So any four of those six would have sufficed. Coolock, Kilbarrick, Port Marnock, Castleknock, Lusk, Phoenix Park. Okay, we will go on to this week's questions. And the first question this week is Croke Park, a place I'm sure many of you are familiar with, especially Northside Dubliners with the strong GA clubs, Vincent's and O'Toole's and Clontarf and, oh, God knows, the Finglas clubs and Ballymun Kickhams and so on. So anyway, Croke Park on Jones's Road is named after Thomas Croke. But who was Thomas Croke? and I'll give you four choices. Was Thomas Croke one of those murdered at Croke Park on Bloody Sunday? Was he a politician, a member of the First Dáil? Was he an archbishop? Or was he an early president of the GAA? Now, I'll go through that again quickly. Croke Park on Jones's Road is named after Thomas Croke. But who was Thomas Croke? Or if you like, what was he? Or what did he work at or whatever? Was he one of those murdered at Croke Park on Bloody Sunday? Was he a politician, a member of the First Dáil? Was he an archbishop? Or was he an early president of the GAA? And question number two this week. I'm going to give you four names now. Three of them lived in Howth. Who is the odd one out? Three of these four people I'm going to name lived in Howth. Who's the odd one out? Johnny Logan, Red Hurley, Vogue Williams, Mary Coughlin. I'll read them again. One of these did not live in Howth. Johnny Logan, Red Hurley, Vogue Williams, Mary Coughlin. And as usual, your answers, send them to us, Instagram at Dublin North Bay Tourism, or search Facebook, Dublin North Bay Tourism, or indeed email us at dublinnorthbaytourism@gmail.com. Okay, before we go on to our main subject, we'll have a little break for music, and we have good old Sonny Knowles singing a song called And I Love You So.
And I love you so. The people ask me how I've lived till now. I tell them I don't know. I guess they understand how lonely life has been. But life began again the day you took my hand. And yes, I know how lonely life can be. The shadows follow me, and the night won't set me free. But I don't let the evening get me down. Now that you're around me, and you love me too. Your thoughts are just for me. You set my spirit free. I'm happy that you do. The book of life is brief, and once a page is read, all but love is dead. That is my belief. And yes, I know how lonely life can be. The shadows follow me, and the night won't set me free. But I don't let the evening get me down. Now that you're around me, but I don't let
let me down. Now that you're around me,
okay. Well, I mentioned there in our introduction that some of our programs would be about personalities, and the one I'm going to deal with today was surely one of the larger-than-life personalities in the North Dublin area. He lived right in the heart of our area. And I'm talking about him and his legendary store, or, if you like, shop, or even institution. I'm talking about Dennis Guiney and the famous Cleary store on O'Connell Street. And sadly, Dennis Guiney and the store, Cleary's, are with us no more. So, we'll do a little bit of the history of the store first, and we'll come along to Mr. Guiney then. Lots of people, and I'll mention this probably later, in the particularly in the Clontarf area where the Guineys lived on the Hoth Road there, will well remember Dennis Guiney, and particularly his wife, who lived on for 37 years after Dennis himself died. Anyway, Cleary's of 18 Lower O'Connell Street was for so long, for all Dubliners, one of the city's great institutions. Indeed, the Cleary story is a large part of the story of Dublin itself. It was for many years Ireland's largest department store. It was first opened as the New Mart, or if you like, the New or Palatial Mart, and was opened by McSweeney, Delaney and Company in May 1953. That's how old it was. It was opened on the then Sackville Street, which of course later became O'Connell Street. It became O'Connell Street in 1924, called after the man I dealt with last week on the programme, a week or two ago, Daniel O'Connell. Now, in 1883, a Limerick man from Bullgarden in Limerick called Michael T. Cleary, he acquired the store and established a firm called Cleary & Company. And from then on, until the store finally closed in 2015, Cleary & Company remained over the door. Now, when M.J. Cleary died in 1898, a new limited company was established that included the somewhat famous Cork-born William Martin Murphy, whose years were 1844 to 1990, who by then owned the Dublin United Tramway Company and later founded and owned independent newspapers. Now, William Martin Murphy's name will ring a bell to you because it was he who spearheaded the Dublin employers against James Larkin and the unions that caused the acrimonious 1913 lockout. Surely if it was an event that will be remembered forever in Dublin, it's the infamous 1913 lockout. Now, Cleary's opened just after the Daniel O'Connell era, Daniel I was dealing with in previous programmes, just after the famine and the Young Ireland movement. And it has witnessed, over time, much in Irish history. The Fenian era, Isaac Butt, Parnell, Davitt and the Home Rule and Land League struggles. It experienced the just what I mentioned, the bitter 1913 lockout, the 1916 Rising, the War of Independence, the Civil War, the formation of the Irish Free State and the development of modern Ireland. So it's like a beacon there all the time. Now, Cleary's was looted during the 1916 Rising and was burned to the ground, with only the facade remaining of what was a very elegant Victorian building. The firm moved to temporary accommodation at the Metropolitan Hall in Lower Abbey Street and opened for business. Now, William Martin Murphy, who effectively owned Cleary's at that time, he died in January 1919. And his son, the new company chairman, Dr. W. Lombard Murphy, he saw to the rebuilding of the store. And the new Cleary's was modelled on Selfridge's store in Oxford Street in London. Now, that was set up in 1912, Selfridge's. That would have been seen as a world-leading store at the time. So Cleary's reopened in 1922 based on this Selfridge's, but it failed to take off as planned. And it struggled from the beginning of the new opening, struggled over the next number of years, and actually faced bankruptcy. Now, Dennis Guiney came on the scene and he bought a fading Cleary's in late 1940 for £250,000 at the time. This was to mark the dawn of a new era, not just for Cleary's, but for Dublin in general. and for shoppers from all over Ireland and abroad. Guiney was to create a merchandising empire. He took a major chance with the purchase, as this was, remember, right in the middle of World War II. Himself and the store were to become a major part of what was Dublin. He opened with a big sale in November 1941, and he proceeded to transform the whole store and indeed transform shopping in Dublin. And the whole thing was, you know, it was really at the heart of Dublin, right in the centre of Dublin in O'Connell Street. Now, although he opened in 1940, the full details of the purchase were not finalised until the following September 1941, when Guiney signed over a cheque for £230,000 because he had already paid £20,000 as a deposit. Now, Guiney's years were 1893 to 1967. He was born near Brosna, County Kerry, in September 1893. He was part of a comfortable farming family, the second oldest of seven children. Guiney served his time in drapery stores in Killoglan and Kerry, in Kilrush and Clare, and then back in Kerry again in Killarney. In summer 1917, he moved to Dublin, and he was employed at Roberts & Company in Grafton Street. He then worked in Leicester in England, but he came back to Dublin in April 1921. That same year, he married Nora Gilmore of Galway, and he opened his first shop at 79 Talbot Street. And, of course, the Guiney shops are still on Talbot Street in one form or another, because later on, other members of his families were to open shops in different parts of Dublin. Now, by 1923, he had greatly expanded the shop and had a staff of eight. Those around him soon realised that he was a born entrepreneur. By the 1930s, he had expanded and had organised 13 large departments in that Talbot Street shop, with a staff of over 50. To Dublin shoppers, he offered the best value in town. Then his wife Nora died at the age of 38 after a long illness. On October the 19th, 1938, he married his second wife, Mary Leahy, from the Shanagolden area of Limerick. Mary had great experience in and knowledge of the drapery trade, and they were to work wonderfully as a team. Now, part of the success of Cleary's was the fact that Dubliners knew Guiney as a trader in Talbot Street, and they knew him as someone who always offered good value for money and great bargains, and they trusted him. He was actually very ahead of the posse in his techniques and his, if you like, his modus operandi. He engaged in bulk buying, and business people will understand this type of language, in bulk buying, small profit margins, fast turnover, and ongoing mass promotions and advertising. In 1967, Cleary's store had over 1,000 employees. Cleary's seemed to be always crowded, and those of you who remember Cleary's, and I'm sure there's many, many out there who were in Cleary's many, many times, including yours truly, it seemed to be crowded and busy. It encompassed 42 sales counters over four floors. It had three bars, two restaurants and a ballroom. Now, with its relaxed atmosphere, it was somewhat old-fashioned, yet it oozed of its very own charm. It was the iconic Dublin business. The goods were always up to date, and you felt welcome there. You felt you belonged there. Now, as well as the shopping centre, Cleary's became a social centre, with dances 7 nights a week. Excuse me. Now, a little book was produced a few years ago about Cleary's, and I don't know anybody looking in, I'll show it to you there. It was written by Peter Costello and Tony Farmer on the history of Cleary's, and indeed Guiney. And I want to read a little piece of how they describe Dennis Guiney. And again, I remind those anybody listening out there, think back, many of you will remember the Guineys on the Howth Road, and especially anybody who may have taken a pint in Harry Byrne's pub, because that was Mr. Guiney's local, and there are many hilarious stories, because Guiney apparently was, to put it mildly, partial to a little drop or two. Anyway, for all his fame as a businessman and all his great wealth, Dennis Guiney was essentially a private man of simple pleasures. He lived comfortably in a large Victorian house called Auburn, opposite Harry Byrne's pub on the Howth Road. But this did not truly represent the real style of the man, as known to his friends and neighbours in North Dublin. Though he owned a car, he did not always care to use it, though a car was becoming more and more an accepted need of middle-class life during those 50s and 60s. To get into work, he would take a lift from any passing vehicle that was going down into the city. His figure was such a familiar one to Northsiders that he never had any difficulties. When he did take a bus, he would only pay with a £10 note now and again, a charming eccentricity, if you like, and the regular conductors on the route were happy to oblige him in this habit, if you like. Likewise with his daily newspapers. He bought these from a local shop, again settling the account with the occasional £10 note. He could not be bothered with a regular bill. He would invite the lady who kept that shop, a well-known newsagent in Clontarf, to bring her small children into Cleary's at Christmas, where he gave them the run of the toy department to select gifts. Guiney was one of those whom charity organisers always knew would be a ready source of help, though this help was often given privately with no publicity. Indeed, unlike so many businessmen of today, Guiney had little taste for the limelight. Nevertheless, many clubs and sporting associations, especially the GAA in North Dublin, they were indebted to him for essential help when the need arose. Now, not that Guiney was without passionate enthusiasms. He was a long-time supporter of the Fianna Fáil party, being, of course, from a part of the country where Eamon de Valera, De Valera was seen more as a, if you like, a figure of national myth than a mere politician. Guiney's politics were traditional, a part of the lifestyle of rural Ireland that he brought with him to the city. Indeed, many Fianna Fáil and Old Republican events were held in Cleary's restaurant. Now, he was very involved too, and intensely involved, if you like, with the GAA generally. And under his aegis, Cleary's staff played for Kickham's Club. That was Kickham's Club in Ballymun, in which all the city drapers were involved. It was named, of course, after the Fenian writer, Charles Kickham, Charles J. Kickham, if you like, whose novel Knocknagow, a wonderful novel, and if you haven't read it, I'd advise you to find it somewhere and read it. That has the famous story of Matt the Thresher and the famous throwing contest with the local captain of the British Army or whatever. And the Knocknagow, it's a tale of landlady days, really, and that meant so much to Denis Guiney's generation and Irish nationalists. Now, when I mentioned C.J. Kickham's club in Ballymun, there was another club in Ballymun at the time as well called Ballymun Gales, and eventually those two came together in 1969, and we know them today as simply Ballymun Kickham's, and those of you who follow the Dubs will know that about six, seven of the six in a row winning Dublin team belong to that, like James McCarthy and Dean Rock and about five others. Nowadays, of course, the winners of the Dublin Senior Football Championship are given the Cleary's Cup, because it was obviously donated by Denis Guiney as the trophy for the winning Dublin team in the Senior Championships. Anyway, Guiney eventually died on the 23rd of October 1967 after a short illness. He had been in the trade for over 45 years. He didn't have any children. Over the years, he had employed over 6,000 people. His funeral was from St. Mary's Pro-Cathedral in Marlborough Street, and he was buried in Glasnevin Cemetery beside his first wife. He had become perhaps Ireland's best-known retailer. He was a very, very good merchandiser with great courage and a wonderful ability. And despite his success, he kept a simple lifestyle, which I've kind of referred to already. He was friends with high society, if you like, high society in inverted commas, including President of Ireland, Sean T.R. Kelly, Sean Lamass, a Taoiseach, John A. Costello, another Taoiseach. But as Kipling the poet said, despite meeting, you know, high society and all that, he could walk with kings, nor lose the common touch. He was a great supporter of Irish industry and very good to various charities. Now, Mary Guiney, his wife, his remarkable wife, survived him by 37 years. She was just 8 years younger than him, and she lived to the ripe old age of 104. After Denis died, she retained control of the Cleary's company, while Denis's nephew, Arthur Walls, took over the day-to-day running of the business. She refused several offers to sell the business, and until the age of 99, she visited the shop often daily and attended board meetings. She signed the company's annual accounts until 2004, at 103 years of age. She was probably the oldest company director in Ireland or Britain. She sold the Auburn homestead on the Howth Road in 1999 for $4 million. And that site of that, these weren't just houses, those big houses on the Howth Road, those of you who know them well, they have, shall we say, very large gardens. And that particular garden of that, if you call it a garden, it's a site that has since been developed into a, well, a mini housing estate, really, called Auburn. Now, she moved to a smaller house at 12 The Meadows, Howth Road, in Raheny, and she died on August the 23rd, 2004. Now, Mary probably made one mistake. She resisted change. And, you know, we all know that all businesses must change, must modernise, or be damaged. And Cleary's was damaged. And finally, it closed on June the 12th, 2015, after a High Court appointed a liquidator on June the 12th, 2015. Now, at this stage, Mary was dead, of course. At this stage, it was owned by a company called OSC Operating Limited. Now, in what can only be called a shameful and even damaging end, all staff, some who had worked in that store for 40 years, you'll all remember this coming out in the news some years ago, well, in 2015 when it happened, who had worked there for 40 years, some of them 40 and longer, and they were all given 30 minutes of a Friday evening to vacate the premises. Now, it was a disgrace, really. And in that year, property developer and controller Deirdre Foley and her Natrim consortium acquired the Cleary's premises for $7.6 million. So as time catches up with me, I'll have to leave the story of that. I have another little bit to add, a very special bit about Cleary's clock. When I mention that, I think a lot of you will know what I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to leave it at there for this week. We'll finish off at the beginning of next week's programme and go through the Cleary's clock and whatever else. So with that, I don't have time for anything else, only to say that you've been listening to the History and Community programme brought to you by Dublin North Bay Tourism here on Near 90 FM. I look forward to meeting you next week and to your quiz answers during the week. Until then, all I say is slán go fóill.